quite a while.
Your power is in the constitution. Yes. Where they before monitor and obeying observance of human rights in the Bible. So it's in tradition. I don't see any harm in that.
My real difficulties lie in all those powers of yours at the back of the door, the summoning this, swearing this, the seizure. I want you to tell me whether these things have ever been used.
Perhaps just to mention before I go into the next one, when you engage with other commissions around the world and you tell them about the section in the bill that we can approach the President of Parliament, it's a wow. I mean, it's considered as something really good, and it comes across as a really respected institution at home, that we are allowed to approach the President and Parliament. So even though it's interesting, you may not see it as being a source with how much teeth. Certainly not exactly. It's not seen or viewed that way at all.
No. The mere fact of the commission approaching, whether it's the president or a municipal manager, you can't tell me that's an event of no consequence. It's an event. It's serious. What have I done now? Really? So you know, the words may approach, you know, it seems like soft, it isn't. Really, it isn't. From all that.
I mean, it's like when the powers that they do, they must report
yes.
to you are obviously much stronger, you know, they're effective. But it's neither. It's something that is there, you can approach them, they can ignore it. Then you pull back on the other part.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I like the clause that all organs of state, including the Natal Sharks, must that's 4A. They must consult with you on matters of policy.
Yes.
Sharpness at Bishop Hart.
I do not hear this.
You can't have all of them that want to do something with you.
To ensure that there's no issues of any institution not managing to protect human rights, because you are the
regulator.
In the shop.
I'm really amused that you people here in Cape Town, you're still playing with the idea of sharpness. We've got sharpness. We've had it for decades. I mean, it's no big deal with us, you know. Yeah. Yeah, you've got this big
debate. My hometown official is struggling with the idea.
Clause 14,000 sanctions. I think the first slide was a suggested rewording from the commissioner. Just to repeat once again what is in the constitution, to put that into clause 14. That's all in the first place. I'm sure you'll all recognize the wording there. And then it would just lead to consequential renumbering. Then there was also some recommendations from the ICC as to what should be included more specifically. And the one is regarding the international work of the Commission. I suspect this is more just a drafting style issue. The current bill does make reference to doing international work, but doesn't specifically say that the Commission must encourage the ratification or accession to international human rights instruments. So I think it's more a wording thing, so that's why we are pointing it out. And that is at the bottom of the page of Paris Principles 3C. You can see the exact wording there. And then corresponding with that, whilst we are on international work, even though it wasn't directly pointed out by the ICC, but the legislation should also indicate or make reference to E of the Paris Principles, which is to cooperate with the United Nations and any other organization in the United Nations system, the regional institutions and the national institutions of other countries that are competent in the area of the promotion and protection of human rights. And I think this is an area which in recent years has really, blossomed, but possibly even mushroomed. I think particularly in the last 5 years, the role of NHRIs at an international level has become so much more solidified and recognized, and you are called on more and more, and Chair can attest to this by the number of emails he gets into his inbox, of where you're called on to comment on things at an international level. It is expected now when South Africa submits its report at an international level that as the Commission we draft an independent NHRI report, that we go to NHRI, that we present that report to the committee. It's expected during Human Rights Council sessions that you make statements, particularly if, for example, there's been official rapporteurs coming on a visit to South Africa. Mm-hmm. In fact, the Human Rights Council just told us the last session they don't want our ICC Geneva to be delivering those statements. They want to see the NHRI in person. Fortunately, you can do them also by video message. But really, it's an ever-expanding role, and more responsibilities are being placed on and are expected of NHRI at an international level. Well, currently, and the way it's worked up until a few years ago, is you would have the state report or the country report, then you would have your NGOs who would get accredited by the UN, and they would grant what is called shadow reports, very often, or NGO reports. Slowly but surely, over time, the various treaty body committees have started recognizing NHRIs as independent and distinct, and that the information that they get is regarded as more independent and credible. There's also been an enormous debate about the role of NHRIs and what should be contained in their report. There is an expectation that the NHRI contributes to the state report, but in no way grasps the state report. So an NHRI report would point out where it has a different view to the state. It may wish to supplement information in a particular area of the report, or it may... And that is allowed into the official forum. There's even been debate at the UN level as to seating arrangements at these meetings. It is frowned upon, for example, for an NHRI delegate to arrive as part of the state party. That is just not on. So the role being carved out more and more. The ICC, presently with the chair as the chair of the ICC, is also seeking speaking rights in general assembly, and there is a resolution to that effect is yet to be granted. It's still being debated. You're seeing with the new treaty bodies coming out, you're seeing roles being carved out and created for NHRI. The whole post-2015 MDG development process, part of that debate is what will the role of NHRI be specifically in terms of the accountability mechanisms for your post-2015 goals. So every day, as NHRI, with like small and limited staff, you've been drawn into all these different areas where you are expected to perform and participate, and it is part of your work.
It's a serious development in terms of recognition of NHRIs. But also at the same time, I think where I think there's still a gap is the role that you play in terms of monitoring submission by the country of the reports. Remember, we're lagging behind South Africa. And do we have a provision that compels you to monitor and make it happen for South Africa?
Yeah, maybe I can say, yes, not in more in South Africa. But when you go for accreditation, you go for the system, you go European Union like report. This already standard report. That standard report that was government, NGO, it used not to have anything about national human rights institutions. But now they are insisting that it cannot only be the report of the NGO, the government and NGO. They also want the national human rights institutions to report. And when we went for the review last year, we were also expected, luckily there was an extensive consultation for the first time in America. But under understanding, consulted for the national human rights institutions with NGO, who participated in the drafting of the report. But where we differ, we just put the processes to the territory. So there is a very strong demand for participation by the national human rights institutions.
No, we need to just ensure that we're producing in our own ways. And that makes when you compare you to monitor the kind of process and ensure that it is out of it.
So, perhaps not the economical wording when I was reading Paris Principles CR, because it refers to ratification, accession, and ensure their implementation. And the implementation of every treaty has got clauses on the state's obligation to report. And therefore, it's one of the things that particularly in the accreditation process, they ask you detailed questions about what it is that you have been doing in order to follow up with your government, particularly if they are late or to report. And I think this is an area particularly that our current chairperson has been very involved in government to speed up these processes.
I think it's a great process now that we have a forum with the humans. We have managed to get the Department of Justice and the Court and the President to consolidate all these outside contentions. So when we meet, in each meeting, there will be sample from the Court where, how far are you in terms of this issue? That's what is in place. Each of our government now is important for things to attend. So all we are saying is that the problem that we don't have a backup, we are just relying on what the international community is saying, that we don't seem to be doing anything within our legislation that there's something else.
And I, all right, first you, Mr. Smith.
But if you say we have nothing to back up, but the Roman 6 under 14, must monitor the implementation of and compliance with international regional domestic treaties, international regional covenants, and international regional doctrines related. Surely that does it, and surely that goes about as far as it can.
Yes.
Because if it's not, it's outside your powers to ensure, to require, the government may not wish, we know that there are examples of instruments that they didn't particularly wish to sign. Now, so without going into the merits of that, it's not your job to ensure that the government
I thought that it is. If I may just upset your equilibrium a little bit. I listened to you speak about going to Geneva and addressing the UN there. And it is true that our constitution provides that you must monitor and ensure compliance with human rights inside. Who speaks to the people of the DRC? Who speaks for the innocent Libyans in the villages that were bombed by NATO? Contravention of UN resolution matters. Libya doesn't have one man's commission. Do we accept then from what you've told us that at the end of your meeting in Geneva, all the countries that have these energy files are given a panel back and collected these parts and come home feeling good?
It's good you are mentioning that.
Let me tell you about Diego Garcia. Diego Garcia is a little island between Africa and India. It's a very strategic point. Commission, comprising Africans, Indians, and slaves. They were forcibly removed from their islands and sent to Mauritius by the British. They still live there in Mauritius, forcibly removed, put on ships. And that island is now under control of the Americans. You do know about the Native Americans, the Indian villages. So, I don't mean to say you're not doing what you're supposed to do. You have the constitution, you have the law, and you're big proud of what you're doing. But you must forgive me if sometimes I become very cynical. I know that that rapporteur came to South Africa, and I watched her move throughout the country, and I wished to bump into her and ask her what she had done about the people of Diego Garcia. The only person who raised their voice on behalf of the people of Diego Garcia was Trent Bingham. His powers, does it matter? Should it not be raised in these forums? We're talking about human rights.
You as a member of the government can't get this country. And I'm sure an agent in Zerko or some relevant department or who are at the United Nations.
Where
the person of war is booked on the outside of South Africa, sometimes he's very controversial. He's representing your government of my country, and some of those votes I haven't done. So I mean, the answer is these sort of functional priorities. I mean, I think the argument is very interesting that it would be desirable that they should become completely independent.
Why?
Yeah, but who is the United Nations Human Rights Committee, which has the party under the parent of Libya? So put dictators in the chair of the Human Rights Committee of the United Nations.
I raised it in relation to the fact that we are being monitored by them, and you are required to comply. Okay, there's these Paris principles. Very laudable. Question. So these people who are ensuring that you comply, why are they silent when the people of Diego Garcia and the Libyan villages? So I wasn't saying you are. These people who call them to Geneva, are you saying to me that they are not aware of this? Of course they are.
No, I think we forget there's a Human Rights Commission. But in any way, you don't have a national human rights institution. You don't have a left system. But as a combination of the African, which would have this, which is less than that, we can also raise it through the Africa Commission, which would have the regional bodies. Which means. But you see, the people are putting the fun on the wheel now, the government. Those are the most difficult ones. Because you will have the highest commissioner sending emissaries to all these points, to Egypt, to others, the response. You look at the response in Syria, for instance.
It's wishy-washy.
is going on forever. It was too quick with Muhammad Gaddafi. But when you look now, it's a different
understanding.
So, the difficulty is, it's there. Yeah. You see, the superpower decides what must happen with. The main fact like they tell us more. I mean, we're there, we sit in Geneva to sit and see how what we are doing. We are living in Egypt right now as we sit in the Hungary and the ice. We have just done that for the Nishan.
The status of the first principle, which you now cited, Bonnie Pichano started citing the Hatta Asani, so that provenance was not that cool. But that was a different story if you start quoting. The status of the paragraph, you are bound by the constitution and the law of the land.
Yeah.
There's no way that you are bound by this. Because you say it's been accepted by the UN General Assembly, I heard you. So within the UN, then your terms of reference. But until, I mean, it's not an instrument of such grandness that it would ever come to the House. It's only when we adopt it, incorporate it into law, that it becomes the law of this land. And I mean, nobody's proposing it. I wouldn't like us to.
No, we're not.
They're not suggesting it. That's why
it was adopted in 1990.
No,
it's
not that kind of
issue.
It's not law,
it's not
right
for
the
children.
That's
why we are not asking.
All right.
Forgive
me, Pat.
No.
I think. Specific comment, it is a very valid point, and I mean 20 years ago there were only about 10 NHRIs, and even though there's 16 status ones, there are 101 countries with NHRIs currently, and part of the UN advocacy of the ICC is to promote the establishment of NHRIs in all of these other countries, and to elevate those who have DLP status up to A status. And I think a lot of the work as well at the Commission is often receiving visits or requests from NHRIs that are being established. In the past 2 years, the South African Commission, together with the Palestinian Commission and the Moroccan Commission, have been assisting the new Iraqi Commission, which has been a fascinating process. I myself personally have been involved in that one and kind of trying to understand the kind of conditions which those commissioners work under, where each commissioner personally has to have a minimum of 12 bodyguards just to protect the commissioner, where most of them will most probably be sending their families out of the country and start grappling with the kinds of issues that they deal with and the kind of conditions that they live in, the fear that they live in. So there are those opportunities which as the commission we get to try and make an impact
in some
of these situations.
Maybe we'll bring to what we've got.
Yeah.
It will be interesting.
You know, South Africa, we have increases for the large ones.
Question about their
I mean, We also just wanted to point out to the committee another recommendation from the IPC, and that was regarding monitoring places of detention, where there was also an indication that there should be a specific clause. Our commissioners have indicated that the commission does have a broad authority to inspect any place where there may be a violation of human rights. I think it needs to be pointed out to this committee that the commission is going to continue getting these types of recommendations, particularly for as long as the OPCAT, the Optional Protocol for the Convention Against Torture, is not ratified and is not implemented. Then at an international level, when we go for our reaccreditation, the IPC FCA is going to make those sorts of recommendations.
Are you precluded from the school prison?
No, we are not. I'm sure it's because of podcast.
And you do this in the alarm when you have to.
Then clause 16.1A, there was just a small suggestion from commissioners to add the word all public inquiry.
16.1A, clause 16.1A.
After the word investigation, to add the word all public inquiry.
Conductor goes to be conducted any investigation called public.
What is a public inquiry as opposed to an inquiry? An inquiry about it.
And then also further down, and perhaps it needs to go with this, is that there should also then be a subsection 16.9, which also goes to the public inquiry. It's quite long, it's set out in a handout, but it essentially is a restatement of very much what it is the commission does currently. A public inquiry would address a systemic violation of rights within the public realm or that of a particular public authority, as identified by the commission in a terms of reference, as well as articulate purpose and scope of the public inquiry, and on the rules of procedure that will be applied. The inquiry may be followed by publication of a public report, and if the commission so requires, the members of any personal organisation respond to its report within a specified period of time.
That's a preamble. It's too much. You can't put that in the book.
Yeah.
Surely.
Yeah.
But
maybe the
essence of it is
the
essence of it. Yeah, okay. Drafting something to accommodate.
Can we just, if you forgive me, because we're into all the little things. Just at the very end of 14, the point we were laughing at a minute ago, the fact that all organs state must consult with the commission on all major policies really possible. And I see I inserted all executive organs of state. That surely is what you mean. It's any form of it. No, seriously. You can't have 1001, and actually there were a hell of a lot more than that. Organs of state consulting you on all their major policy matters. It's nonsense. What you surely mean is, or what we mean, is the all executive organs of state, meaning government, people with the power, whether at the municipal or provincial or national level, to the power to make policy, to execute, make laws, regulations, municipal ordinances, all of it. But those are the people that you're after. You want them to consult with the commission on policy matters affecting human rights. And then the question is it even fair to expect every government in this country to do that?
I presume, Surgeon, that this bill has gone through the cabinet process, but it makes it very difficult to govern. For
every
policy, now it says major policy issue affecting human rights. I mean, we had that deliberation when we were dealing with the Constitutional Amendment Act and the Constitutional Court. Every possible issue can relate to human rights. But I'm not opposed to it, but it's just it's a compulsion.
Right.
I have to consult with you. Does it happen at the moment? I mean, how much work are you going to have? Does it constrain government to do its job? That they're going to have to consult with you? And you're going to have to respond.
You have your basement, just like with a fire manual, you'll have your basement full of government documents everywhere. And it's never
been. True. And it's not even me.
17, commissioners are aware that there have been discussions in the committee around search of premises. Commissioners want all those clauses. They don't want any of these powers taken away from them.
Is that right? And as a person, have you ever used?
Yes.
Oh.
And I think you could be sure, I'm sure we can get to be sure you know the existence of this law, of the service agreement. Not long now when we start making our report, our socio-economic report. There were two, three departments we did not respond to our questions. We sent out the notice that we're going to have to cancel it. And all the
and they had a little bit.
Yes. That's why we don't want that. We don't have to. I'm
but you've been agitating for it to be removed.
No.
We did it for a reason. Yes.
Okay.
No, that's an answer. We did it for a reason. We knew there would be some Hitler and Idi Amin like us. And we said this will sort it out. You've got to find those people. You just say to the chair of the human rights, take a hike. Well, okay. Invoke Section 17. Not now. They came back to us.
We'll notice in the report. When we table the report,
we
normally indicate.
Right, 17 days. But we'll go through it.
There are one compromiser. Commissioners would think that Section 17A B should be deleted as unnecessarily wide.
We'll look at that.
The provider does not plan.
We'll look at that, right?
Then clause 19, which is the reports of the commission. As the commissioner said at the end of clause 19.1, that some wording should be added and shall submit its annual public accounts to the relevant committee of the National Assembly. That's just rewording the clause. There was also the commissioners do not support the report going via the Office of the Speaker. Commissioners are of the I think that has maybe come up in discussions in the committee as to how the report updates.
So you have to, it's a formal.
Well, it goes to the speaker. You know,
yeah.
You need to go by the speaker.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not a, it's just procedural.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
know.
It's also a proposal from the commissioners that the National Assembly should facilitate the establishment of a joint committee to discuss the Section 1843 report, Economic and Social Rights Report. Alternatively, the Justice Portfolio Committee could facilitate such a joint meeting.
I take offense to that comment. I really do.
Are you an expert on this idea?
No. I don't think you can just take the view that you would be a disaster. I think in that case you should speak for yourself.
I also know that you don't answer. But that's the situation that's
that's the problem because it deals with so many
part within government.
Yeah.
You don't know whether you want to open one, open one.
Multiple parts.
Yeah. Just one must then come to the resolution, the box, the committee report, yes, we can facilitate stuff on that.
But I think we understand what they're saying. Associate, I mean, that's going to be a nightmare. As far as possible.
Before you leave 19, can you go back to 18?
18, yes.
Where
the commission doesn't wish to address us, but we thought 18 one, and I think also 3 were unheard of. Subject to the provisions too. The commission may, after consultation with the minister, in consultation with the minister of finance, order the expenses or the portion of expenses incurred by any person in the course of a connection with an investigation by the commission be paid from the National Revenue Fund. I said in accordance with the PMFA, but I mean, we haven't heard this thing before. And in sub 3, if a person has suffered damage in the course of execution of a warrant or one of your search and seizures, which are so effective as a deterrent, the commission may order such damage be made good from the National Revenue Fund. No, you don't want this, right?
No.
You're not getting it anyway.
You would like it, but it makes it money for it.
Yeah,
it
was a debate among
the we will actually engage with Mr. Scott on this, right? So
yeah.
We understand.
Lauren, what you have to indicate with the commission, did this come from the commission?
I think it came from
us. Well, we're so sorry that it didn't form
the commission. No, the ICC.
No, they didn't know this.
Oh, you keep us hidden from me. Okay.
So just finally on report, just to point out clause 19.4,
yes,
which is the clause which says that organizations and institutions must respond within 30 days.
Correct.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, there's an ICC recommendation supporting that as well, so that is definitely needed. And then clause 20, which deals with the stance of the commission, in terms, there's a suggestion regarding clause 20, sub clause 3, but that's just a word one. After the first word, the chief executive officer, and in accordance with the budget prepared and approved in terms of the provisions of the PFMA pertaining to its Schedule 1. That's a wording issue. And then in terms of clause 20, subsection 5, the consensus is that it should indicate there was no specific wording, but it should indicate that staff remuneration, allowances, and other employment benefits are aligned or followed, depending on the wording, are aligned or followed or follow the public service. So that is de facto what it's benchmarked currently. So we didn't have any suggestion of exactly how that would be worded, but that is the principle that was needed. And then in 20 subclause 7, the commissioner said that the words in consultation with the Minister of Finance should be removed.
So, what's the question? Is it question 9, 10 to 93, which refers to the commissioner? So that there must be disentanglement, because the commissioners will go to the public office of the commission. I think this section must be replaced, bearing in mind that this is not enough.
Okay. Look at that. It's the independent commission for the remuneration of office bearers. What they're saying is that the staff shouldn't form part of that.
And nor should the two processes be linked. They're separate processes, whereas it was confusing.
Okay.
With staff being federalists being determined according to public service package.
No, the commission is
staff salary will actually be determined according to public service packages. I think you need to actually, my hope?
No, not necessarily, but first, when we go, they go to the vacation council.
Yeah, because that's not our vacation council.
Unemployment will determine what is the salary.
Yeah.
But when it comes to vacation, 7% and the like, then we say public service takes 7% last 7%. Well, we have such a small board, you know, to engage in the vacation council.
No, they're not suggesting that. They're saying when it comes to the salaries and benefits, the model will come. Okay?
Sure.
It's a problem.
I like the
Okay. Yeah, because the last one is very small. I mean, I think again, it's just wording. Clause 21.1, just to add two words, financial management, before the word responsibility.
Another thing here, which is constitutionally problematic, to put it mildly, in the regulations under 24G. 24G, ministerial regulations. It says the minister may, after the commission has made a recommendation, make a regulation on the circumstances under which and the conditions and manner in which a member of, a member of staff may be found guilty under the law. Thank you.
Okay. That is. All right. Okay. Mr. Lovis Kapri, who's here, has been listening very attentively. I'll wait to get his comments.
Yeah. I would like to deal with the Human Rights Commission's submission on the legal practice law, which is why all the legal advisors are here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, we are. Right. Next item on the agenda. Who's taking over? I see you just shaking your head. Oh, good.
The chairperson will add. I think just to recap, when we appeared before the committee in February, it was to point out that the legal practice law did not make provision for the commissioned attorneys to appear in court. And that up until now, in a number of the provinces, the law societies had used the model of a law clinic to recognize our attorneys so that they could go to court. So essentially what the submission was saying is don't forget about the commission, please make sure that we are included. But we didn't set out in any specificity as to how this should be done. Just prior to the meeting, the Honourable Swartz was just showing me a later version of the bill, which I know has not yet been formally considered yet internally by commissioners. If the committee would like us to go back and do that, then, you know, certainly it can be sent to the commissioners. But there was some reference in the bill, and I thought fleetingly about the commission having trust funds and trust accounts, and very clear that that is not what the commission wants. The commission would not want that.
This is the thing. Mr. Dyer, you will assist me if I've left anything out or I've misrepresented what is discussed. It is possible for a court to award a community represented by the commission or an individual whose human rights have been violated for that court to award a person or a community some money. So the question that arose in the committee was, what is it? Mr. Swartz, because he has more knowledge of these things, pointed out to us that, well, the money will go to trade and towards the community. So we said, fine. In that time frame, yes. And there's absolutely no chance of that check, that reward, ending up in the commission's bank account. And there we go. Yes?
I mean, Ms. Lowe pointed, she took a view that you were misreading the legal practice bill in the sense, your concern is obviously, we said it, but in the sense that you thought it had any application to your lawyers at all, because I think that's the view from the department.
Well, see as it's defined now, legal practitioner is as defined. And we would need to be sure that however it's defined, their attorneys are included. Yes. It's no longer in the definition.
But the inasmuch as the bill is about forms of legal practice, the view I think that they want to be one that is simply doesn't even find application to attorney to work for institutions like yours.
Yeah, when they speak, it will help us. I think it's good that this bill has come.
Yeah.
Because we have had cases where ostracized member and they don't go that the matter was supposed to pay 100,000. And I'm still asking myself where would that money have gone? Right? At least that was specific to the gay and lesbian community. In other words, it was not even the commission does not intend receiving any money on behalf of the community, because all we are doing, we are actually maximizing the use of the equality court, where people will not be expected to pay any legal fees. We go in there, it's not mainly on matters where we deal with intellectual matters. It's mainly the violation which is the violation in various forms, instructions, apology, and all of those things. So we have got very little instances where it happens that where you want the conversation in the form of money. They are very, very limited.
But they are there?
They are there, yes. So the question is, how do we think through? Because the requirement for a trust account, I know I've dealt with it. That commission cannot handle a trust account.
This is smart, and then Ms. Adams is the easiest way to address.
Chair, I raised the issue because when I read the clause in 84.10, it jarred because there was a specific reference to folk and law, human rights commission, and I asked the question, why about, what about other disciplinary institutions? And this was at the suggestion that you should insert it here as an institution, and that's why we wanted to engage with you today. Now, you have been inserted in the sub-clause, but as the reading is now, it doesn't protect you. But let me first give you an understanding of, if you litigate as an attorney for the Human Rights Commission in the Equality Court and you win your case, ideally, the defendant will give you a check in favor of the plaintiff's name, not in favor of the Human Rights Commission. That is how state litigation is done. So that is ideally, so there's no need for a trust account for this account. The concern that the committee has raised is what happens to that money if you then, as an attorney, go and open a fraudulent bank account in the name of the plaintiff. That's a possibility, but it's not really likely to occur. But even on that formulation, Chairperson, as it is formulated in the bill, it won't help. Because the bill says no legal practitioner in the full-time of the state or human rights commission can receive any money except in the course of your employment. So you are acting in effect in the course of your employment. If you can open a bank account in the course of your employment, the only way you have got access to that check is because you are in the course of the employment. So it in effect says that you can, as an institution, hold money because you will be acting in the course of employment of such legal practitioner. But the state, and one by indication, with the Human Rights Commission, only on behalf of the state and for no other purpose. So my reading of that clause says that you can, as a state attorney, as any person, you can obtain that money. Now, it doesn't happen, because the money goes straight to the client. And my experience, you just write the letter as the attorney, say,
find the attached the check to your capital sum with interest, and that's how it goes. But the wording here says that you may not hold money except in the course of your employment of the state. So the different scenarios, the scenario of the fraudulent act, which is the exception which can happen, that it would, you'd have to open a bank account in the name of the plaintiff as a state employer, which is unlikely, but a fraudulent person might do that. And the second issue is that you can obtain that capital check and hold it in the course of your employment as an attorney in the Human Rights Commission, as it is presently formulated. So you might want to look at that again. Definitely the intention is not to have any trust accounts or anything like that. But the idea is, how do you handle your litigation costs that you recover, or damages costs? You've now got a clause that says you can get damaged, so there will be money flowing, but ideally it should go directly to the person affected by the litigation, or if you break down someone's door and there's that damage clause, that person gets the money, a check from whoever.
I think that I hear what you're saying, and it's much better if it doesn't come to the commission. Maybe as we go and look into this clause, it will be important to look at the other state agencies, because they've got what they call a deposit account, which is not a trust account. It's simply to hold money until the owner takes it. It's not a trust account. So we need somebody, we need to check, you know, the meaning and how it should happen. But you do have in all government bodies a deposit account where if money you are waiting for somebody to come and take the money, put it in the deposit account. And in that deposit account, it doesn't even bear interest, because the interest goes to the state, so it must quickly come in to get up. So we need to relook at this loss, because you cannot exclude the possibility that somewhere it might happen that somebody writes in a check out to write this to the South African Human Rights Commission.
And the question that posed by what happens when someone steals?
State liability. You see, if you go for trust account, then you are involving yourself in a charity fund. It's going to be nice.
No. Yeah. You understand that.
Yes. State liability.
State liability. But you must say
that
what? Yeah.
In terms of the Human Rights Commission Act.
Yes. Oh, it's applicable to that. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Sure. So, did I hear correctly, though, saying that an argument was also being made that the commission is not covered by legal practice law?
Yes.
I'd like to hear that because, as to what the counter argument is, because currently forms of legal practice in terms of the bill are only for own account, commercial juristic entity, non-cross juristic entity, legal aid, or employment of the state. Now, for an attorney to appear in court, they have to be registered with their law society, be on either the practicing role or the non-practicing role. Now, to get on to the practicing role, they're going to say, and in which form of legal practice? Are you practicing your own account? They'll go through them all, and you can go, no. So you're not going to be then recognized by the law society to get onto practicing role, which means you won't have right of appearance. The court will not be able to see you, which is why the commission has to be factored into one of these in order that the court will accept their attorney and court, that they can be registered with their law society, and the court can actually see the attorney when they apply.
Yeah, and the department will answer. But I think in your submission, you also made reference to the fact that your people are registered as a law clinic with the law society. Have I understood the Malara? She said that she thought on this point you were misreading the law and it simply doesn't want to have relation to your particular circumstances. Yeah, so let's hear this.
Yeah, you misread the law. All right, Mr. Dyer, I don't know whether we adequately covered.
But do we have to give the court matters a lot in the court? We just want to read ourselves. Because the recognition by the law society is different from province to province. Not all provinces gave us the significance. So I don't know where do we...
It's not the rule of science and business capitalized now. This is not the council.
And your problem is not to get the supervision by the Legal Resources Centre, including one of your commissioners. We're not particularly happy with the two descriptions of blue clinics. The one university aligned and the other one is not from. And you referred the idea that we should stay firmly in the LPC, the LPC, the new regulator, would sit out the details of regulators on their board. It would simply... There were about four lines in the whole proposal from LRC, remember? This could be one line after the other. But a few little, a tiny little section, and the rest, the Legal Practice Council does what the law societies have done for you today. So you, it then becomes possible to have different kinds of law clinics, and the LRC's concern was that to draft them in the detail in which they have had in the bill could quantify the growth and invention of new kinds of law clinics at a time when South Africa was so desperately need to roll out legal services to people who are paid. So that's
I also just think that when you go into individual recognition that has been given today to the various commission law clinics, I think when you study the Law Society rules and what those decisions were taken, the law clinics have been overly generous in their interpretation to ensure that they could give us recognition, because it was recognised that we do have a constitutional duty and obligation to go to court. I think, so the issue is now, and it was never attacked by anyone, but quite potentially could have been sort of attack that we shouldn't have been given law clinic status if you read their regulations and rules very tightly. So the issue is now, when we look at the definition of law clinic, we clearly don't fit in there. And though you would want at least something in the legal practice book that at least opens the door so that the commission is recognised, then it can be taken into account when regulations or any further rules are drafted. But currently, as it stands, it's going to be asking the new legal counsel to once again, on very flimsy grounds, and give very generous interpretations to what is here, because we are not a university and we are not an NPO. So we are not being catered for yet, and I'm sure some clever drafting, though, it could be something could be done.
Must we do that? Or should we do that?
I think.
It's very easy. Under 7.34, attorneys may only practice for their own kind, commercial juristic entity, part of a law clinic, or an attorney in full time employment of the state board, chapter 9 institution.
Thank you.
Suggesting that's where it should come in.
34.4F. I can just add in there whether it should be all chapter 9 institutions or any of the human rights commission. That's the simple one. Right, and then you have it.
May I happen to the point I found LRC reference? They propose the bill should therefore be simplified to provide. A law clinic may be established by a non-profit organisation or any university in the Republic, I assume this, provided that A, in the case of a university, is constituted and governed as part of the Faculty of Law, B, in the case of an NPO, its chair and the majority of its governing body are comprised of legal practitioners. I think we've already done that part. C, all legal services at the clinic are rendered by a legal practitioner under supervision. D, the legal services rendered by it must be rendered by a free of charge. So that was the LRC proposal, and then you can, you know, then you can take it from there. But it's simplified and doesn't stop the time.
Of course,
it solves your problem
with
the stroke of a pen. we need to think a little more broadly.
I'll engage with the commission just to seek clarity because it's bordering on slight confusion as well for me. So I'll try and deal with that to find out exactly what is it that they require in terms of their needs and factor that in. And maybe just prepare something for the committee as an option in terms of our adopting.
Bear in mind, this is what the suggestion was on. Rule 34. 34.4. Well, following your question, Ms. Bishwana, we handle you. No, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. All right, I think we're done. We'll see you all tomorrow at 2. Thank you. V11, eh? Tomorrow at 2.
It's the only thing that's not the old thing that you've got.